Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex.
I'm American Justin.
Oh, he's alive, folks. I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later, wherever you get your podcasts. And if so, you can get ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Speaking of which, that's a
what are some other benefits to joining the Patreon,
Alex? Oh, great question, Justin. Thank you so much for asking spontaneously.
I haven't ever thought about it, and I wanted to jump in.
I'd love to tell you. So for $2 a month and up, you can get access to our back catalog of podcasts that goes all the way back to 2011. A lot of those aren't online anymore. We also have a very active, very fun Discord that people can hang out in if they're part of our Patreon. Delightful, a highlight of my day. And then going for up from there, we have different levels where you can get our daily news podcast ad-free. You can get our exclusive Patreon podcast, The Week in Geek, that only goes out to Patreon supporters $5 and up. And then other benefits from there. You can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, other swag. You need another mug in your life, right, Justin?
I'm a mug freak. I love a mug. I love the idea that this whole time we were meant to be setting you up with, like, what other Patreon benefits? And this is the first time ever that we remember.
It's ever happened.
And we're like, line.
No. I don't know. It was a website. Go to the website. Anyway, one of the other benefits is that once a month we say thank you to everybody who has pledged at the $5 and up level. So why don't we read their names off now, kicking it off with Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Alana Fontenot.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Beercat PhD.
Bradley Hansen.
Brian.
Kerry Matthews.
Chad Breck.
Chad Post.
Chad Post.
Post. Chen Smile.
Christina Gerberla. Sorry, I forgot to sort out the duplicates this month. Go ahead, Pete.
Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Luer.
Corey Cachet.
Oh, good. I like Pete gets louder and weirder whenever he can't pronounce a name. It's a classic speaking technique. Corey Smoker.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Danny Heck.
David Donaldson.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Doug Sataway.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Eminem.
Enrique Chumbas.
Gary Mayer.
Gerard DeVilliers.
Ian Rainey.
Ian Thomas.
Isaac Carter.
JG.
Jack Foster.
My guy Jake Fry.
James Connolly.
Jared Sloan.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
Joe Benton.
John Henderson.
Jonathan John.
Jonathan McCool.
Josh Wright.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Breaking out the Josh plaque with Joshua Weigler.
Kelby.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Lance Kaminsky.
Breaking out the Luana Thomas block with Luana Thomas.
And that's the end of our Luana Thomas block. Moving it on to Lucas Inc.
Matt Tice.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Matthew Tapama.
Matthew Schofield.
Max Baker.
Michael McAuliffe.
Michael Tillman.
Nathan Hall.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef, Brett Macris.
Stray Bullies. Omnia Soul Art.
Oren Dix.
Oitis Larson.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettinato.
Robert Ron Hood.
Roxanne Tyler, my mom.
Shout
and yours.
To Alex's mom.
Ross Burlingame.
Scott, Sarah Schottmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Scotty Doo.
Severin.
Spencer Bills. Go Bills.
Stanley.
Steve Cook.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Bench.
Troy Molyneux.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
Will Diaz.
William Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
And of course, Zika's Viral Comics. Hello.
Thank you all for your support. We sincerely appreciate it and could not keep the show going without you. Again, if you want to support, patreon.com/comicbookclub, where you can be in that list of names, horribly mangled names.
You could also be my mom. Anyone on that list is my mom.
We have a level. What is it? It's $50 and above. You can be your mom.
Yes, right? And let me say, it's a sweet little job. It's a sweetie pie position. And Mother's Day's coming up, so it's a great time to be my mom.
Yeah, we're having 50% off on Justin's mom.
I don't. Please stop.
Keep in mind, Alex, you can have your fun. My mom listens to this. Yeah, and she's going to have something to say.
Okay, I said that wrong. That's not what I meant.
Good.
Listen, good we one. Have two amazing guests for you this evening that have nothing to do with this list of names we read. But again, thank you to everybody. Thank you to everybody who supports the Patreon. We really sincerely appreciate it. First up, she is the creator of Return to Sender, which is out in stores now. Ladies and gentlemen, Vera Proskel.
Hey,
Vera,
welcome.
Hello.
Thank you. Good to see you again. Thanks for coming on the show. Very excited to talk about this. We had you previously to talk about your graphic novel. Plain Jane and the Mermaid. Is that right? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I feel like that was 3 weeks ago. But it was pretty much a year from now.
Yes,
yeah.
But now you're coming back not for a graphic novel, but your first ever novel, which is in stores now, called Return to Sender. For anybody who is a fan of your drawing, there are still spot illustrations throughout. But this is a bookie book, not a comic book.
Yeah, the drawings are awesome.
This book is great. I love this book. It is such a fun magical journey, perfect for kids and adults and everybody. But just to broadly talk, why go from graphic novels, which has been your sweet spot for so long, to novels?
Did you fall in love with words, or what happened there?
Very much not. It was kind of a long story. This tried to be a comic. This started as a comic. I don't know if you know, but this was a web comic. In the early aughts. It was my very, very first one when I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
I maybe got less than 100 pages into it before I ran into just like a flaming plot hole and had to go to college. So that's what happened. It never got finished. So it's like one of a million webcomics that doesn't have an ending. But I always liked the idea. And it's just kind of been kind of in my pocket. Is something that I thought maybe I'd come back to someday. And I did. I kept trying to like figure out what it could be. Like, is this a screenplay? Is this a graphic novel? And I tried again in like 2011 to do it as a graphic novel. My publisher was interested and I started drawing it. And it just was a really abrupt realization that I hate drawing cars and fire escapes. And it is the story set in Manhattan. There's just no way around it. So I was either going to just suffer drawing my least favorite things, or I had to figure something else out. And that's the thing with comics. Like, it's just you. You're kind of limited by your own abilities, for better or worse.
It's very funny that it boils down to, like, why did you write this book? Well, I hate fire escapes, so I wrote a book. But that's the process.
Hey, the motivation is there. Silly, it doesn't matter.
Silly, lazy answer. I mean, the real answer is I wanted to try something different. I like to pivot real hard, which makes me hard to shelve. But I'll go from picture books to graphic novels to animation. And this was something I'd never tried before. I wrote prose as a little kid, but I never showed anybody. And I thought it would be fun. I loved reading Roald Dahl books growing up. And
yes.
I was like, can I make one of those? That seems great. Just draw like three cars instead of 20,000. And it worked in the story.
It's interesting because it feels like you gave yourself sort of an extra level of difficulty. And maybe I'm wrong, but given that you're taking and you're adapting something that you created so long ago, not only are you taking it from the comic book format to the prose format, but also you got to get either back in that headspace or sort of erase that headspace and move it to your current headspace. What were the challenges there, or was it easier than I'm painting it?
It was really easy. There's really very little left of the original besides the title. There's a magical mail slot in a wall. So that's still there. And that was the part that I kept. I thought it was just kind of like a fun thing I hadn't seen before as like a mechanic to make wishes, to have like a letter come out and tell you what to do. Because who doesn't want to be told what to do? The greatest.
I love it.
Have like a wish come true. It's awesome. So the premise is this boy, Oliver, has a mail slot in his kitchen wall with nothing on the other side. And if he mails a wish, it'll give him a simple instruction like move your water bottle, 3 feet to the right or something like that. And it will set off a Rube Goldberg sort of thing that will lead eventually to the wish coming true. But it keeps going. It keeps kind of snowballing until everything kind of evens out. So that wasn't in the original comic. That was something I kind of came up with as I returned to it. I made everyone children because I work in a children's space now. It changed a lot. I think it got a lot better.
Well, so wait, what, just because I'm not familiar with the original webcomic, yeah. What remained?
Don't look it up. Nobody
what,
look it up. Yeah,
wow. Well, I'm just surprised because what you describe seems like, well, that's literally the entire concept of this book and the characters. So other than changing the concept of the characters, it stayed the same. What was actually the connective fiber?
Again, it's just that little gimmick. Yeah, it was just really kind of surface stuff. I also kept the secondary character, Colette. She was always really fun. She's just sort of like this manic, giant-mouthed child who bites people. She's been expelled for biting. She's just so much fun to bounce off of any sort of straight man character. So she also survived, but she also changed a lot. She's 9 and she's incredibly wealthy, and her parents haven't seen her in months because they're working all the time. Her dad's mom and her mom's at SoulCycle. So she's this like abandoned little rich girl who's super game for causing chaos.
That's straight out of real life Manhattan, having just been there yesterday. Do you feel like you're bringing the magic of mail to this generation? I feel like when I was a kid, snail mail still was magical. Now I feel like I've lost the magic of mail for sure. Well, nothing fun comes really anymore.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have any of you have children? How do they feel about mail?
Yes.
Do they like it?
I mean, I will say the times when my mom will send, shouts to my mom once again, she'll send like a letter to them, and that's when they're like, so, but it's just like a once a year thing for them, or a couple times a year, basically.
Huh. I feel like I get, well, around Christmas, everyone's just sort of inundated with cards, and I happen to be friends with a lot of artists, so the cards will be really cool. Like they won't just be, like a Shutterfly photo. So that's pretty fun. But I don't know. I still get really excited when I see my name handwritten on an envelope. And yeah, it doesn't happen as often, but I feel like it still happens. I don't think it's going anywhere. Stamps are definitely still a thing.
Stamps are forever.
Oh, my God. That's good. did you guys read the Jolly Little Postman?
Yes.
I don't know if you're around my age, but I think those books are still in print. And those were incredible. There were these children's books about a postman delivering letters to nursery rhyme characters, and they would be, these must have been so expensive to print, like actual envelopes that you could open interact with and pull the letters out, and there'd be like little treats in there. And I read them all from the library, so most of the envelopes were empty, but the concept seemed rock solid. I think it's just like super, super, super kid friendly. It's just presents. It's just like paper presents.
I wanted to ask you about the interplay, and for anybody who's just listening and not watching, we are looking through some of the pages here, and they vary from these delightful little spot illustrations. Just sometimes you'll have a full page back to back. Sometimes the illustrations will sort of leak more into the prose and change the format of it in a way. How did you approach that? Was it an improvisational process? Was there more thought behind how you would hit the illustrations versus the prose on every page? Mm-hmm. How did it come to you?
Yeah, this was really interesting. I'd never done this before. As you can imagine, like the second you add an illustration, all the text just shoves a bunch. And it has to land roughly in line with what you're reading. What you're looking at right now is the other kind of fun puzzle to solve with this. So as he makes the wishes, it sets off these chain reactions. So I had to figure out how to illustrate them, how to work them into the story. And for a second, I was like, can I do these as comics? Like, it just suddenly switches to comics and you see all these things happen. But it would have just been pages and pages and pages. That's the other thing I loved about prose was you can just, like, drop into a little scene. So you can see the dotted lines are the thing that kind of separates. It jumps POVs as all these different things happen to different characters all over the city. And in comics, you would have had to set up who these people are, where they are. Like, it's hard to jump that quickly in comics without more page space to set things up. So prose was really fun for that. And I came up with this sort of dotted line arrow motif to represent the effect of the wish as it kind of ripples through the city. And as you read the book, the dotted lines kind of get more and more insane as the consequences get bigger and wilder. I worked with a really amazing designer named Aurora at Macmillan, and she was super helpful with figuring out like where everything would land. And I also just went through and I read a ton as a kid, and the drawings for me in the books that had drawings were like dessert. Like every time you get to one, and you don't want to go too long without one. I feel like I probably could have done more, but you know,
I love it because you got to have the gap. It's like you're saying, like the playing straight man to another character. You need the jumps between. Like I was a cheater, and I do this now with my kids. I'll like flip ahead and be like, "Are there some drawings coming up? Oh, there is. Okay, great. Flip back real quick. Yeah. Get to them."
I would look at like, the side of the book. You know, like when you can see where something.
Yes.
Maybe you're like, "Oh, there's something coming." All right, just hang in there. You get a drawing soon. So I tried to make sure there was a full page spread every chapter, like the one you're looking at now. And then I just went through and dropped a spot illustration of anything that seemed fun, that might be fun to draw. And that was kind of interesting because the art doesn't tell the story here. It really is just like treats. I talked to my friend Carson Ellis, who illustrated the Wildwood books. And I asked her, like, how did you decide what to illustrate? What was important enough? And she's like, it's not that it's important, it's just that it's fun for me. What did I feel like doing? So that's kind of how I tried to approach it too. Like if I think it's a funny drawing or I think it's an important drawing, I put it in, but it doesn't have to carry the story. The words are doing all that work, which was so wild. Like they're so much more important. My comics are pretty light on words as a rule. I do a lot wordlessly. So it was just like a total of my brain, which was the point, I guess.
So then did making the drawings, the illustrations, did that become fun? Like you're talking about how like it was a stressor at first when you're working on this. And then did it become fun in the actual process of it as well?
Totally. Yeah. It was totally, like the hard work was done. The story was working. It was just like little sprinkles in there. I was so looking forward to it. It was really, really great. And it took like no time at all. Whereas with comics, you write the script, you feel like you've done a big lift, but then you have to go through the whole book like three more times, even more slowly. I couldn't imagine like doing that with this story. I would be like halfway through pencils right now.
Where does this leave you then, now that you are past this process and it is on stands? Like obviously you need to see the feedback, but you're like, oh great, I don't have to do that comics thing anymore. Or do you want to get back to it? Are there some of the tools you've learned here that you're going to take into your comics work? Where's your head at?
I think it depends on the story. Like I said, like this is such a big Manhattan-y, like giant thing with like different dimensions and so many characters and all this stuff. But if it's a really simple, like emotional story, I think I would absolutely want to do it as comics. It would be more fun that way. I think it would be stronger. So I think it's just gonna, you know, like my other stuff, go idea to idea. I see how it fits the best. And obviously my publisher is gonna have opinions about that.
It could be an ongoing webcomic. We don't know.
Yes. Oh God.
or maybe not that.
It's just like terrifying. The thought of every like people seeing a page at a time and just like laying the track. That's terrifying now. I think when you're 16, you're fearless, but I love like planning. Like if you look, that is my next story.
Oh, yes. Wow. Oh, love to see it.
Quite planned. I know what's happening and I know what my themes are and the emotional stuff. And like, I want to be able to change my mind.
Well, wait, can I ask a question about that? Because I'm always so curious about how people lay out their stories. And for anybody listening, again, and not watching, you have a board that's covered in Post-it notes, right, at this point?
So and meticulously organized, neatly framed, like color. Beautiful.
It's
a painting.
Do you sort of, like, I guess similar to the TV model, like, do you take a look at that and sort of start switching around scenes, or how do you approach it?
Yeah, the first round of that is usually like, does this need to be here? Which was really important with comics. I do this with all my comics too, because I have to draw it. Is it moving the story forward, or is it just sort of redundant somehow? And as soon as you put those up, it just sort of kind of throws it into relief if you're repeating yourself. But for this one, I had to move. I just talked to my editor about this, and I had to move like a big reveal too much later in the story, and this is where I did that surgery. So I like moved the reveal physically, shifted everything back, and just checked if everything still made sense, if I could keep things, or if something broke. I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people's brains work better on paper than digitally. I've tried to do this with like software. It doesn't quite work the same. The problem, though, is Post-its are not sticky.
I was about to ask about that. Keep falling down. Short book. And then you look at the floor and there's just a pile of Post-its there.
A strong breeze can really ruin your day.
All that laborious rearranging. So everything's like pretty secure. And I take photos every once in a while to see what I did.
Smart.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how younger people are doing it. Because maybe, you know, I grew up with paper, but people who grew up without it, their brains don't work that way. I don't know.
They're doing it all on TikTok, I hear. That's my hot tip. Yeah. They edit it together. They stitch it in the app.
And then it's done.
TikTok's amazing outline tool.
It's coming, probably. TikTok final draft. They'll make it happen somehow.
Dance your script.
Before we let you go, this is, I believe, your book birthday, and I always like to ask people on their book birthday, have you been to this story yet? Have you seen it in the wild?
No, I haven't. I got my box that arrived at my house, and for me, that's the book birthday, more so than seeing it in the wild. But I'm going to Green Bean Books in Portland, Oregon on Saturday for like a little release party with like 4 pounds of gummy candy. So I'll get to see it then. And that'll be really nice, because I'll, you know, be there with a bunch of kids and friends. And I think it'll be nicer than skulking into a store and being like, do you have my book?
Hey, notice you didn't have my book. Is there a reason, or what can I give this to you? What's happening here?
Can I sign someone else's book? It'll be cool, it's weird. Book birthdays are weird. They're very normal days, but they're also very not normal days. So my next step after this interview is to go wrap some bicycle handlebars as a treat.
Hooray!
For my dessert. Wow. Yeah.
No follow-up questions.
Yeah.
Vera, this book is amazing. It's really good. Loved it. Absolutely delightful. Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. Good chatting with you, and hopefully we'll have you back whenever the Post-its start to coalesce into a real book.
Yep. Next year.
Next May. Next year. I love once a year. We get you. We see the check it on the Post-its.
Yep.
It's great.
Awesome. Vera, have a great night. Thanks so much.
You too. Take care.
Later.
All right. The book is once again called Return to Sender. It is awesome. Out today. from Macmillan, so you can get it at bookstores everywhere. You don't have to be scared. You can go. You can check it out and ask them for it. And in fact, you should demand it.
Yeah.
Your local bookseller. And folks, we have another guest this evening. He is the creator behind Benjamin, which is coming out in June from Oni Press. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben H. Winters.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hey. It'd be funny if I just like walked in one of your offices there, like you didn't know I was crouched.
Oh man.
Yeah.
On the shelf the whole time. And just, has anyone ever done that? Like a prank, you know?
Justin, you did that once, right?
I did do that. During COVID, I was in Philadelphia where Pete was living, and we started the show, and I popped into his frame. It was a lot of work for a very short little joke, but
that's cool. That's the best. Nice to meet you guys.
Ben,
thanks for having me.
Nice to meet you.
Oh my gosh. Very excited to chat about this book. Very excited to have you on. Before we get into the book, though, I do need to get one thing out of the way, if that's all right. Just get it out here, because otherwise one of our members is going to be bursting at the seams here. We mentioned at the beginning of the show, we do a Patreon podcast called Week in Geek. And on Week in Geek, we talk about TV shows and movies, geeky TV shows and movies. We generally talk about, like, you know, Andor or the Marvel shows or whatever, except for Pete. I'm pointing the wrong direction. Pete, who is obsessed with Tracker, that you created. And Tracker comes up, this is not a joke, every week.
Every week
on the week.
He's a Tracker super fan.
That's right.
Yes.
He's seen every episode.
And for anybody listening,
bag in a jacket somewhere.
Ben, you developed the show. You developed Tracker.
I was the original showrunner, and I was at EP on the first season. I'm not with the show anymore, but I'm very proud of it, and I have many friends over there. So I will. I'm very glad to hear that you're a super fan. That's fantastic.
Oh my god!
I think there's one more of season two. I think, are they about to air 19 or 20? There's 20.
Yeah, it's on 18 right now. Yeah.
He doesn't. He often is like, there was a new episode of Tracker last night. Like it's a surprise. So he does catch him off guard. Yeah, every week. They just keep coming.
Well, it's funny because, like, so much television these days, especially, like, you know, a certain demographic, like, we mostly watch, you know, like, limited series or, you know, 8-episode or 10-episode runs on Netflix. Like, to be a super fan of a show that is just delivering that weekly dopamine rush of, like, oh, it's a full network season. Like, it's nice. I'm so glad you're enjoying it.
Plus, there's more episodes in this season than last season, which is an extra bonus.
Because the whole inside, I mean, because of the writer's strike, that we were supposed to premiere in the fall of 23, I guess, and they pushed us to February 24 because the strikes.
Yes.
They had the strike going on even another week or two. We were right on the bubble of losing the whole season, so it was kind of a miracle. We got the first season, and I think it was 13 episodes that we did for season one. But anyway, thank you so much.
I just want to geek out a little bit and talk a little bit about how the show got started, because I love the show.
Yes, I swear, by the way, we will actually...
We'll move on for this in a bit.
We just need to get past this hump.
I love the show. I want to talk about the initial idea that where you, somebody who is a tracker, how did this happen in your life? I also love this idea of, like, just someone who pays attention to details can do well in life. You know what I mean? Like, it's a great kind of lesson to walk away from, you know?
The truth of so much mystery storytelling, and, like, very much including, like, a lot of procedural here, is, like, they're all just Sherlock Holmes. In other words, they're all just playing a riff on Sherlock Holmes, which is, like, totally, he notices things. That is why he is so good at what he does. But that actually, it was developed off a novel called The Never Game by a guy named Jeffrey Deaver, who's a very successful novelist. And so... and that it was being developed. The short version is that the star of the show, Justin, he and Ken Olin, who's the pilot director, they had basically optioned the book in order to be a series for Justin. Be like, this is a perfect vehicle for you. And so the project was in the works for about a year, and there was a writer or two that had kind of tried and not been successful. And so I sort of came in and pitched them on how I would handle the material. So I sort of. And so it wasn't an original idea of mine, but I sort of figured out how to make the character work for TV, I would say.
Well, thank you and congratulations, because you killed
this mug.
It.
Actually, this is my Don't Let the Bastards Get You Down mug. This was given to me by Abby McEnany, who plays Velma on that show. It was one of my very best friends. So,
that's awesome.
There you go.
Well, thank you for your work. I really appreciate it. I enjoy it.
And also, I want to thank you. This is the most engaged Pete has been in an interview.
Yeah, you really lit him up. He's and he is here every week. He just doesn't say much in this part. But you lit him up.
But let's talk to Benjamin. Talk about Benjamin, which is not you, Ben, but Benjamin the comic book, which is really awesome, wild sci-fi concept. Before we get into that, not to keep delaying here, but every week on the show we have a professional chef down in New Orleans named Brent Macris. He works at a restaurant called Chef. He either curates or creates a cocktail for us. And this week he created one based on Benjamin called Turns Out in the Future LA Gets Weirder.
Oh my God. Wait, you're going to send this to me. This
is amazing. 100%.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So it's bourbon, mezcal, hibiscus syrup, lemon juice, orange bitters, and lemon peel. He notes in the description he lived in LA for a couple of years. It was pretty weird. It gets even weirder in the book, Benjamin. So that's his inspiration behind the cocktail. So there
That is amazing. Well, I see his recipe description ends. God, I hate LA. Sorry. That's so cool. Tell him I said thank you. I love New Orleans, and I love a good cocktail. And a bourbon mezcal, that is interesting.
I'm
gonna try it, but I'm a little nervous about it. But that's okay.
Yeah, it's good. He makes really good cocktails. Yeah. We guarantee them. All right, but let's actually talk about Benjamin. So this starts with an incredibly successful novelist. Back in the day, he wrote, I think the description says something like 40 books, something like that.
Yeah.
He died.
Yeah.
Decades later, 2025, he wakes up in LA in a hotel room. Everything's changed. He's back alive. He doesn't know how, and he has to kind of figure out the mystery of his own death. Is that an okay way of...
Yeah, totally. Basically, he dies in 1982, and then he wakes up in the present day in a motel room in LA, and he doesn't know why or how. And as it happens, his body of work, much of it, had to deal with these sorts of deep, weird existential questions of what is consciousness? What does it mean to be alive? What are we doing here? What constitutes a human mind? All that kind of stuff. Which, and so suddenly it is as if he is, and he may actually have been thrust into one of his own stories. And so the story of the book is this guy basically wandering around LA trying to figure out why he's here and what life means. Like, sort of like me, like all of us, right? And a little bit of the fun of it is that the nature of the character, like he's not a super cuddly guy. He's like a very sort of curmudgeonly and brusque, and his head is just full of ideas. And so he has this kind of sidekick who he meets, who kind of helps him with his journey. And there's some action adventure stuff and a lot of weirdness. You know, he's trying to figure out what the deal is. You know?
It feels like it's right at the crossroads between like paperback sci-fi from the like late 20th century and noir. The waking up in a motel room is that like the nexus point?
I mean, that's the nexus point, and that essentially that intersection you just described is basically where I live. You know what I mean? That is my home. The intersection of paperback sci-fi and noir, and like, and really like. He is a Philip K. Dick type of writer. I won't say he is modeled on Philip K. Dick exactly because he comes from a lot of different places, but definitely that era of science fiction, which is sort of like the 60s, 70s, early 80s of just like, and there were these guys, and they were mostly guys, although not entirely, who just wrote a ton of stuff. And there was a kind of just that paperback era, you know, the spinning racks of Bantam paperbacks.
Yes.
Just like they weren't built to be quality books with like beautiful covers. There was a sense of just like an overflow of ideas just being just generated. And like Dick himself, you know, he did a lot of drugs, and there were years in the late 60s where he would publish 8 novels because he just didn't sleep, you know. And part of that was symptoms of mental illness, and part of it was addictive behavior, and part of it was just like he was making a living barely getting paid essentially by the word or the page, which is like, go, 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 go. And I find that to be not a lifestyle I would enjoy, but there's something kind of exciting and interesting about it.
My question is, where were all these like quiet writers getting cocaine back then? Where's the connect?
I have like research on that. I mean, he was in the Bay Area most of the time. And I think there was parts of Oakland or East, you know, the East Bay where he knew the right people, you know, he's kind of knew that. Justin, I don't know you that well. We can talk about it all.
Let's talk. We should talk. That's how you got all those Tracker episodes out the door. But like Stephen King in Maine, I'm like, who's the hookup in like Bangor?
I think about that all.
Banger, and you're like, now I can write Carrie now. I'm sufficiently dope.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go.
Yeah, it worked for him. Let's be honest.
Yeah. You have Leo Max on art on this, who was also the artist on an amazing book called Basketful of Heads.
Love that. Joe Hill.
Yeah. The art here is absolutely gorgeous. What's it like working with him on the book?
It's just so great. And the thing is that I'm relatively new to comics, right? Like I am. This is essentially my debut as a comic book writer. I have, as you know, worked in television, and I've been a novelist for a long time. But and so I didn't come into this being like, I know this artist, and I've worked with this woman before, and I demand to, like, I was very much in the hands of Oni Press and Sierra Hahn, who's my editor on this. And she's so smart, and she knows everybody. And she was like, look at this guy, look at this person, look at this woman, and like, what do you think? And I gravitated to Leo Max's work. And so it was that thing where they send you pages and they're like, you know, do you have any notes on this? I'm like, no.
Like, how dare you?
Like, yeah, it's like my note is like, I can't believe I get to that. This is real, you know?
And yeah.
I really, it's analogous to TV a little bit. The idea that you're writing something and it's really a comic script is a blueprint for something that's not yet finished yet. A comic strip script in and of itself is not a complete work of art. It is completed by the letterist in the penciler and the inker. And so to start to see those pages come back. And I did, of course, every once in a while, I'd be like, well, what if we try this or this? But like, it is a weird and beautiful thing to see someone kind of come in and complete a vision in that way, you know, to really, and I think part of it is you're learning as a comic writer, as you are in TV too, to communicate to other artists precisely what you are seeing or imagining. When you're writing a TV script, you're communicating to a pilot, to a director. With this, it's like you're trying to, and so it's not just the quality of the art, it's the quality of the sort of sensitivity to read the page and go, oh, I get what this guy's trying to do, and I'm going to execute it.
Well, and also, like, can you talk about, I feel like with TV or any sort of filmmaking, the process is like, we work on it a lot, we make a bunch of decisions, but then the day happens, and then we're pretty much done. Like, we're not going to reshoot everything. Working on a comic, like, yeah. You can, like, okay, let's actually change this a bit. Let's refocus. Like, it gives you a little bit more in the toolbox or in the timeline anyway.
It does. I mean, just in general, of course, because the stakes, the table stakes are so much lower. You know, making a comic book, a television show costs, you know, it can cost $6 million. So $10 million. And there's lots and lots of people who are working on it and like the union guys, you can't just call them back. You know what I mean? It's like,
Hey, I had one more idea, guys. Would you mind coming back?
you cast someone, that's the person, unless there's a major problem. So with comics, there's this wonderful, and actually it was funny, like the way this worked out was really coming off of the Tracker experience that was my main sort of time that I put into this. It's like there's a wonderful freeingness to it, or freedom, probably the actual English word, and a wonderful freedom to be able to like to collaborate and to try things again and to push boundaries, and like especially for a story like that, like this, where like there are sequences where he's imagining himself in outer space, or he is, you know, there are multiple versions of him. There's all this stuff that like if you were to write that on a page of a TV script, it's like, oh well, that's a $200,000 thing you just wrote there. Like, are you sure? Yeah. You know, that's going to cost.
Be very careful how you write that.
Yeah. Which is, you know, it's cool and interesting. And it's a gift to be able to work with those kinds of tools. But this was just like, oh, I can write whatever the fuck I want. And let's see if this guy can figure it out. It's like, wow.
Well, yeah. maybe I have the chronology wrong here. So please correct me if I'm due. I know you're saying that this is your first comic work, but you had two stories in EC Comics that came out before this. Was that part of getting you sort of assimilated to the process of comics, or was it something that like you finished Benjamin and then they liked working with you?
The EC stuff was, now I can't. I think I had a lunch with Hunter Goranson, who was the publisher
of Omen. Oh, yeah.
Relatively soon after he got that job. And I can't remember exactly what the chronology is here, but it was, and he was one of these mad scientist guys who's like, his mind is always just like, I'm going to do this. And I knew him from a previous TV project that had totally fallen through. It was kind of tragic and like, but we liked each other. And I was working on Tracker. I was in my office and we had lunch. And I remember him being like, okay, well, I'm thinking about this. You know, let's talk about it yet, but I got this EC stuff going. And also, do you have any ideas for a comic book series? And I was like, well, as a matter of fact, I do. Because I had this idea for a book and thought it didn't quite work. So I pitched him this, and we talked about the EC stuff. So it all sort of came together around the same time. And then just the fact that my EC stories have come out before this is kind of nice in terms of introducing me to folks like you guys in the sort of comic book world before this official debut, or whatever you call it.
Jumping back to the story itself, like in the description, it talks about how our main character is going to have to go from Studio City to Venice Beach. And I know I was just in LA a lot last week, and that's a difficult journey. But how is that difficult for him, I guess? Can you talk about the story of it?
I mean, I wanted the story to express a little bit of the geographical reach of LA, because I just think it's so fun and interesting. And like, so the seedy motel is near Venice. It's not on the beach, because that would be too expensive for him. But it's like off the beach, and it's pretty much a rat trap. And you see there is a range of lodging available as you get close to Venice. But then also this guy Marcus, who works at the motel, who ends up being his kind of buddy, Benjamin helps Marcus go recover his dog, which is with his ex-girlfriend. The point is, it's up in the Hollywood Hills. You go up to the beautiful, fancy LA, which is just fascinating in its own way. And really, basically, by the end of the first issue, Benjamin has his first clue as to what the reality may be of what's going on here. Because basically, by the end of the first issue, he starts to suspect that what is happening to him now reflects the plot of one of his books. And it takes him a while to figure out which one, because as we've noted, he wrote a lot of books and he barely remembers some of them. So that's the sort of thing. So then in issue two, he's going to sort of act on that. And then he's going to have to go out into the desert and meet some other people. We talk of a conspiracy. Let me talk of space aliens. It's like, he doesn't know if he's a clone. Is he a clone? Is he an alien version of himself? Is this another dimension? Any of these things might be possible, you know? So he has to experiment and explore. And meanwhile, he's growing closer to this man he's just met, and becoming a bit of a mentor to him in a strange way. So I guess sort of what I'm most proud about the series is that it is this weird sci-fi detective story, but just under that surface, it's a story of emotional growth and him like figuring out the kind of man he maybe should be or maybe should have been while he was alive.
So this is a story of a mystery writer, a successful novelist, who is named Benjamin J. Karp, and you are also a novelist who is named Ben H. Winters. The names seem very familiar.
Thought of that. Oh. No, I mean, look.
Busted.
I don't know. I mean, look. It is possible that like Karp, I am also a sort of curmudgeonly middle-aged science fiction writer trying to figure out what I'm doing. You know, like, I don't know. But I don't know. For some reason, I've never really done this before, this kind of it's not really self-referential because his life is nothing like mine, but this kind of meta, the kind of wink-wink of it, I just found it really pleasing on this one. For some reason, it made him easier to write, to imagine that he is in some way some alternate universe version of myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
We are all always in some way our characters. Like, you can't escape that. It's just true. There's some piece of that is you. And for some reason this time, I just thought it would be fun, you know? Yeah. And like a little bit obnoxious to be like, my first comic is called Benjamin. I don't know. I just like myself, but I don't.
To be clear, I love the meta wink of that. Like, it does give it another layer of, you already have this character who's like, wait, who am I? What is going on with my identity? And then it raises questions of like, is this the author? What's going on here? Yeah. So messes it up in an entirely different level.
And it feels spot on to the novelists from back then who were writing so quickly. They were like, this guy's name is also Ben. Hurry, I'm almost done.
Right. He's like, we're going to come up with a name. Well, here's my driver's license. Oh, that's a good one. I'll just, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. I hope it's like a hard book to really thumbnail. You know what I mean? But I think it's part of the kind of fun. There's like a slight silliness to it. It's dark in its way because it's about death and it's about like rediscovering your humanity and trying to figure out what we're all doing here, all of that stuff, our relationship to God and to time and everything, you know. But at the same time, it's like, it's ridiculous. He's a ridiculous character. Like, he comes back to life, and rather than being astonished, his first reaction when Marcus, the kid, shows him his Wikipedia page is he's mad because he's described as a cult writer. He's like, that's a backhanded compliment. You know what I mean? Like, it's as if like you, it's, he's so human. Like we're all like, he just immediately focuses on the wrong thing, which is like so very human. And I don't know. I guess I'm like that. I imagine that's what I'd be like.
Well, also, not to keep jumping back in time, but this is the first time that you've worked on a mind-bending project that has to do with comic books. You also worked on Legion and wrote an episode there. That's one of our absolute favorite shows. We did a whole separate podcast about Legion.
Oh, wow.
Love which, that show.
It's great. It came up, like, I was talking about it this week. We were talking about it in our Thunderbolts podcast because there's, shades of what is going on there, but I think it was better in Legion, to be honest. Anyway, what was the experience of working on that show like? Because it is so mind-bending, and it was so wild. What was it like in the writer's room, or what was it
like? It was great. That was actually, that was a really fun room. There was a guy named Nathaniel Halpern who was the show, he was my sort of immediate superior on that show. Noah Hawley obviously created the show and was the kind of the uber, I guess he was the EP really, and it was his show. But it was a great room because I was brought in for season three. Is that right? Was it season three I was on? I think so. I think there were three seasons. I was on the last season. And the show was already so, had gone to so many strange places and had such a sense of, really like comics of like, well, anything is possible here. This character lives in, as you guys know, he has this extraordinary power. He goes sort of in and out of these different very bizarre places. And basically by the time we were at the end of the second or third week at the writer's room, it was like, I think this is going to end with the world ending. It was like, okay, well, let's just figure it out to get there. You know what I mean? and Noah is, he's a very rare character in that he would come in like every couple of days and sort of hear everything that we were talking about and sort of synthesize everything very quickly, push aside the stuff he didn't like and push us in a certain another direction and then leave, you know? He was working at the same time on, I forget what season it was, I think of Fargo. So he was sort of going but I loved it. And actually, so Nathaniel was in the room, a woman named Olivia Dufault was in that room, so smart and great. And this guy, Charles Yu, was in that room, who subsequently wrote the novel Interior Chinatown, which won the National Book Award.
Oh, wow.
So like, just big brains. I mean, just big brains. And like, that was a good one. So I worked on that show. And then I worked on another show called Manhunt that was on Apple last year, which is very outside the comic book universe, but it's about the hunt for John Wilkes Booth and Lincoln's assassination. It was great. So fun.
Fun show.
To get back to the comic books, just before we start to wrap up here, now that you do have this experience, and just to mention for anybody listening, this is coming out as three prestige issues starting in June. Do you have that bug now? I mean, obviously, I'm sure you want to work in TV as well, but are you interested in doing more comic books?
I honestly don't want to do anything else ever again. I love it so much. I'm obligated to keep working TV, and I love TV, and I love writing novels also. But there's something about comics that right now, at least, I'm finding extremely appealing, and I will 100% be doing more, including more stuff with Oni that I sort of yet to be announced. And I think it's as you guys know, it is an extraordinary medium, and there's like things that I'm going back and rereading and reengaging with from earlier phases of my life, like in comics that I don't think I ever quite appreciated how much of my own sensibility, my own sort of artistic ideas came from that world. You know, I was like, I'm a little older than you guys, but like, for me, it was the Justice League of America, Justice League Europe, like the DC stuff from the like early 90s, late 80s. Like I don't know exactly, but like, the, you know, Booster Gold and like,
the comedy, J.M. DeMatteis stuff.
Yeah, J.M. DeMatteis. Yeah, exactly. The stuff was like, and like, there was like a long run of Batman that I just like, I loved it so much. And then, like, I sort of went to college. I was like, all right, that's enough of that. And then, like, I right now I'm going back and, like, rereading all this. I was like, oh, my God, it's so good. And I'm just right now getting into, like, I'm going back and rereading, like, the Swamp Thing, the Alan Moore Swamp Thing. It's
man.
This is art of the highest caliber. I mean art just, like, creative expression of the highest caliber. Like, it's,
yeah.
And, like, you feel the influence of, like, Edgar Allan Poe and Lovecraft. And, like, it's like, oh, this is just, it is part of this broader traditions. I don't know. It's so great.
Anyway, welcome, man. Glad you're enjoying it.
I'm in.
All right. You're part of the team. Ben, congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much.
To check this out. Thank you so
much.
I'm going to pass on your best wishes to the tracker.
Please do. They're doing a hell of a job.
it's definitely set up for season three. I imagine that show's gonna be running for a long time. So I think you're,
it's like, it's the number one show on TV for the past two seasons, right? It's crazy.
Huge hit. Yeah. Huge hit.
So if you could leave Pete some clues that he could follow, that would be awesome too.
I actually, you know what? I've left them throughout this whole interview.
Pete! Yeah.
Who's the killer, Pete? You tell us.
Yeah. Hurry.
Ben, thank you so much. Looking forward to solving the mystery.
Thank you so much for all your work.
Have a good night. All right.
Wow.
Wow. Pete, you're going to have to solve that one. And for all of
Pete, he dropped a secret quiz on you and you didn't even see it coming.
Crazy. Benjamin, once again, is coming out from OD Press on June 18th. There are three issues. The art is by Leo Max. You can check it out.
So fun. The art looks amazing. Def, check this out.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Def.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. We'll keep an eye on Instagram as well. What? I will. Do I even need to not say that?
No, I like it. It's funny. It's like a little thing.
I'll tell you, we got Curtis Archangel watching, Knight of the Chihuahuas joined, Mombe.
Shouts to everybody watching. It's very funny to me how you're like putting Instagram in a separate like lower class where you're like, and I'll keep my eye on you.
Here's the thing. This is way too much information, but it literally is a window below the window where I have this stream, so I have to switch from one window to another. And oh boy,
switching windows,
what a chore!
And we are working on a BTS doc on Alex's experience, so you can really play along at home, window to window,
There's a whole, I think, like 45 minutes on me switching the windows from.
Oh, it's really good stuff. It's dramatic. It's crazy because one wrong click, and I guess nothing happens technically.
Are we going to get to audience questions or what's going on?
So. Oh, sorry, your tracker glow has worn off, Pete. Now you're back to impatient.
Well, a lot of people want to know if you really went to Rome or if you were faking us out.
Pete doesn't believe
you
went to Rome, but Straight Bullet says, how was Rome?
Because you were like, oh, it's all behind me, but we couldn't see shit, so it was pretty, you know.
Yeah, I just went to a dark basement to fool you and then canceled the stream early is what my my prank was. I did go to Rome. Rome was fun. I was working there. I was there in and around the death of the Pope and the ensuing aftermath of that going into the conclave, which starts tomorrow. So it was a wild experience. I attended the Pope's funeral. I watched the procession.
How was the food?
Not a lot of food served. There were 250,000 people there. But
really?
They served...
There's no buffet?
Oh, no, they passed out riblets as Pope Francis, the Pope of the people... certainly had a little bucket of riblets for everyone there.
As you do.
Famous Catholic tradition. But saw a lot of things, wandered around a lot, ate some pretty good food. The best thing I had there was a grilled marinated eggplant. was very good.
Was it? It's almost like era marinated. What kind of marinade?
You don't really do that. It was Pete. You would know this section.
Parmesan. It was a
Parmesan
hero.
Why don't you guys what was it?
Yeah, say all your Italian words, and I'll tell you which ones are correct.
Spaghetti,
a little capicola. What are we talking about here?
Salami? Okay, Pete's becoming Italian. No, It was Pete. Are you familiar with the State Fair Speedy sauce?
Oh yeah. Are you fucking kidding me, dude? Get fucking Speedy's chicken sauce. It's fucking phenomenal, bro.
Okay,
huge fan.
Real quick, one of them has to go vanish from the earth. Tracker or State Fair Speedy sauce? Your excitement was equal. Your excitement was equal for both of those things.
You can't take one away from me.
I have a little bit of a surprise for you. We actually have the creator of State Fair Speedy sauce that's coming up.
He's got a really interesting comic.
Dude, I had Speedy's chicken this weekend, bro. I fucking love Speedy's chicken.
Me too, same. My brother makes it all the time.
Yeah, so it's my brother.
Oh my God, we're the same person in so many ways. But all in all, good trip, good to be home, all good.
Do you have any pictures that can prove you were actually in Rome?
He was in Rome.
What more do I have to prove to you? I mean, yes.
I mean, you just skipped out on a show and then reported from a black kind of room, and I was like, you know.
Why you doubt me, Pete?
We don't need to watch vacation pictures here necessarily.
Yeah, there's the eggplant.
That's all I need. I'll prove I'm in Rome.
Here's a close-up picture of an eggplant.
It proved it. I know how to convince Pete of stuff.
Prove it.
How about that motherfucker, huh?
Whoa!
You don't see that guy hanging out in New York City.
What is that, the New York Library?
Yeah.
That's the front of the New York Library.
That's in St. Peter's Basilica, where they got weird statues everywhere.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, I'm not convinced that's not another eggplant.
Yeah. Did I show you guys the eggplant? Let me show you.
You showed it.
Okay.
It did look very good. Yeah. Schreukler says, in the spirit of a couple of Ben's prior books, if you could write a twist on a classic comic run, which would you pick and what would you do to it?
Ooh, interesting. On a classic comic run. I mean, certainly we have notes. We have ideas.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. This is the first thing that came to mind, and I don't know if this is what I would pick, but like maybe a detective story set during Crisis on Infinite Earths, like sort of like a very ground level, somebody investigating a mystery while the world is ending type thing. That might be kind of neat.
That's cool. I like that. My mind is going to like Batman DMZ, No Man's Land, that sort of world. Mm-hmm. And hearing, like, we got, like, a lot of Batman stuff in that and some of the villains, but, like, I want to see, like, more of a... But it was all, like, your Bat family. I want to see a superpowered character in that world. Give me, like, a Wonder Woman drops in, a Flash.
Mm-hmm. Pete, you got one?
Nope.
Great. All right, and it's now time to turn to our political corner. Pablo DiMartinez says, how do you guys think of Trump's tariffs Hollywood? I mean, this does potentially affect us. There was a thing that Trump put up the other day being like, I'm putting a 100% tariff on movies that are filming outside of America, and he can't do that.
Well, yeah, let me just break down how insane this is. And I understand everyone's stressed. Everyone is reacting to this like there's a consequence of it because movies are always in a precarious place and the viewership's going down. People aren't going out to theaters anymore, blah, blah, blah. But a tariff, first off, he said movies being filmed in other countries is a national security threat. It is not. So that's he can't put a tariff on it. That's how he has been claiming his tariff power in general, and that's not accurate. A movie doesn't go through a port, so tell me where the tariff lands. Like, where is it when the footage is emailed to the editor in LA or whatever? Like, that doesn't make any sense. There's no apparatus for this. Will it be like it's a global business? Like, if an editor is in Paraguay. Is that being tariff? None of it makes sense. He had a weird dinner with John Voight, who's also old and weird, and they were like, let's say stuff. And this is what came out of it.
Yeah. So this is something I think is you do not actually need to worry about at all. Like, there's been a lot of ink spilled about it already, but it's all of the hypothetical variety. This is just him putting some shit online and running his mouth as usual. On the Game says, general thoughts on Thunderbolts and Sinners. Thunderbolts, we put up a whole hour-plus podcast in the Marvel Vision feed. Justin was surprisingly the most positive about it. That's the short
answer. I love T-Bolts. Yeah. And honestly, like, I consider it, to give a little bit of what I said on the podcast, it feels like a real pivot point for Marvel. They've had a tough go of it. I talked about it as, like, the first few phases, Marvel's used genre to tell great superhero stories. Then they became a genre and started to fail. And I feel like they're pivoting out with this movie, breaking the format. It's exciting. I enjoyed it a lot.
And Pete and I disagreed. And as for Sinners, I haven't seen it yet. I really want to see it.
I want to see it too, yeah.
I'm going to Sinners on Thursday. So oh, nice. I will be there. Being out of town was a real bummer to not have seen Sinners yet.
Yes. Nat says, what time do you need to start the movie Conclave in order for it to sync up with the real Conclave? Apparently, they are looking to Hollywood movies to try to figure out how to do the Conclave, which is a funny bit of news. So, I don't know.
I mean, Rome's 6 hours ahead. The Conclave starts, I think, tomorrow afternoon local time. So if you started at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. maybe, that's when it will start. They're doing one Conclave vote tomorrow. And that's it's the rumors that I heard in my time in Rome, Pete, is that this is probably going to be a fast conclave, is the suspicion.
Jared Sloan says, how many times did you say when in Rome, when in Rome?
That's the trick of it. You don't say it there. You say it when you're not there.
Huh.
Shrey Bullet says, I want to take Pete's secret Alex quiz.
Well, you got to go. You're all over the place. There was one that was, Nats was actually legit.
What?
Before this, before that, on the Can scroll. You,
what did Nat say?
Nat set worded it properly for what the secret quiz. He said, I would like to take the secret quiz. Which is the exact words you need.
Oh, okay. So because Stray Bullet said, I want to take Pete's secret Alex quiz, he's disqualified.
He's not allowed.
It's wrong. That's wrong. But Nat can do it. I love Stray Bullies, but you got to say it properly.
No, it sounds like you hate him.
Don't say that. Don't put that in
Well, all right. I guess Nat's going to be able to take the secret quiz at some point, but until then, we are going to move on with our next section.
Wait. All right. First off, earlier someone had asked about the LePage tape, so I wanted to clear that up. I looked it
you
up
know
after
you can
the
bring
show.
Up comments too.
Well, I'm letting you do it, but there was stuff
letting
you missed.
Letting him.
Well, I don't mean it like that. Take it easy.
Look at this.
Anyways,
look who's settling into his position as the new Pope already.
We got Pope of Comic Book Club over here.
But yeah, it turns out LePage tape is huge. There's like LePage.ca, and it's like a huge website.
Huge website.
Yeah, I was surprised how famous it is, because it's like Scotch tape in America, but it's called LePage tape in Canada. And so someone had challenged me to actually look it up to see if it was true, so I did, and I was surprised.
Now,
and someone asked about that earlier.
I want to go this summer, great time to travel. Let's get up to Canada and just see if we can use some of this LePage fame. Let's see if we can open some doors up in our great neighborhood.
Hey, I'm all for it, man. I'm all for it.
We get a LePage tape parade.
Straight Bullet says, I want to take the secret quiz. Is that okay?
I'll let it slide. What's the password, Straight Bullet? And what's the password, Nat?
Jesus Christ.
What do they get? One guess? And is there a clue about it? Or is it just like, I love that this one has no adjective. It's just like the secret quiz.
Yeah. It's amazing that you like and watch Tracker, a show that I'm sure has more clues than this.
Yeah, I would hope so. It's just Tracker being like, all right, say it. You gotta say it.
All right, we're gonna move on with our next.
Wait,
session.
No, there are two guesses. Oh, Stray Bullet says Alex. Nat says Foggy.
Okay, Stray Bullet has moved on to the Alex secret quiz.
Is Nat moved on to the secret Foggy quiz?
Nope.
Oh, okay. So there's no secret Foggy quiz.
Yep.
Great.
There is a secret quiz about Alex. It seems.
That's right. So for the next portion of the secret quiz, Stray Bullies.
Can I make a guess? How many skulls do I have?
Nope.
In your head, the answer may surprise you.
I need another Alex password.
What?
What is this? A series of secret doors? What are you doing? This is crazy. All right.
How would anyone know what it would be, though?
Curtis Archangel says, what is the one free comic book day comic you must pick up? There are a couple of good ones. I would give a shout out, actually, to Dark Horse's Critical Role Avatar comic. The Avatar backup was great. Super fun. To spoil it a little bit, even though part of the joy was not knowing it's coming. If you're a fan of Avatar, The Last Airbender, it's Momo and Appa as wandering Ronin traveling the land going into adventures.
Yeah.
Great.
Love Very it. Fun.
Yeah. And there was one other good one. I don't know. I can't remember. Anyway, that's what I would recommend. What are we doing? What is going on here?
I will say,
that's funny, but unfortunately, it's not right. I wish it was.
Is there any direction?
I made this before that joke. I made that before. He can't take it. He can't get. He's
no. This is. We're gonna pretend this is also Stray Bullet. Is it Cornell?
You can't. That's a great answer. I wish I had put that as well, but no, I didn't put that as the.
Is it Zalbin?
Is it?
Wait, like he's just laughing. He's just giggling.
It is, isn't it? You have to say my first name.
And then his last name?
This is also, not a quiz.
You're basically saying, hey, man, say a word, and I'll tell you if that was the right word out of millions of words.
Is it six-pack abs?
That's a different person completely.
Salvin?
That's Stray said that.
Stray said that, but no, that's not true.
That's not it. Okay.
Stop bringing that up.
Does that unlock anything?
It? All right, that quiz is over. Try again next week.
That unlocks
just a picture of me.
That unlocks my sexual awakening. That unlocks America's boner.
All right, this is the part we get back to you, the lovely audience.
Hold on. We got a couple more actual questions we can run through real quick. Okay. Frederica Rosa says, what movies are you guys looking forward to this summer? I'll say before Thunderbolts, they play the Megan 2.0 trailer. Delightful.
It's crazy to think I'm also excited for that, but I genuinely am. That trailer is crazy in such a positive way.
Yes, it's great. So really looking forward to that. And also they showed the trailer for Predator Badlands, the future set Predator movie from Dan Trachtenberg, who did Prey. Looks great. It's a Predator, and Dakota Fanning is a android he teams up with to kill an even bigger beast. Cool concept. I'm very excited for that.
Pretty fun. Wow, interesting. Alex, have you ever heard of a movie called Superman? I guess you don't give a shit about that, dude.
Yeah, wow.
Also psyched for 28 Years Later. Very going for that one. I don't know. What do we think about Tron?
No.
Tron?
Absolutely not.
They've really tried hard on this. Why would they make this movie if they didn't have something good about it?
I don't know, man. Jared Leto starring, having his same Morbius hair. Not into it.
Wow, that's a really weird reason to be mad at this movie.
Do you know what it was? So the concept of the movie is the Tron stuff starts escaping into the real world. And immediately people online were like, so Pixels? It's the movie Pixels with Adam Sandler? And I was like, oh no, you're right. It does look like serious Pixels.
That's a crazy thing to remember, the movie Pixels. shouts to the Phoenician Scheme. Definitely looking forward to that.
Now you see me three.
I'm looking forward to Mission Impossible.
Shout out to Stanley.
And getting around to eventually seeing Sinners at some point.
And have you ever heard of a movie called Fantastic Four? God, what do we even do here?
We talk about serious adult things now.
I'm not looking forward to that at all.
Kyle Jones says, Alex blew my ignorant mind in that little video interview posted when he said he's written some comics and he plans to write more. Pete and Justin write anything. This is a very nice person at Big Apple. I'll look up what the actual name is. At BIX, the Brooklyn Independent Comic Showcase that we're at, was going around and was nice enough to interview us about Comic Book Club and some other things. I say us, it was just me at the table.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, but but that was very nice of them to put that up. Potentially, I mean, I have other stuff that I've written, and there's always things that I want to get around to, but there's always a lot of things to do. Anybody want to plug anything else?
I am actively working on a comic now. I just got an artist, and I will have something by the end of the year, it looks like. So very excited about that.
Yeah, I'm working on some writing, but it's not comic book stuff, but, you know, it's all...
Just the sonnets you talked about?
Yeah, yeah, mostly sonnets and poems.
Quizzes?
Yeah. Yeah. Secret all passwords? I'm writing passwords for stuff.
There you go. All right, thank you, Kyle, and thank you, everybody. And now, for real, we are going to move on to our next section, right, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. If you had $25, you'd probably want to go to a comic book shop. So all we need is a first hand up, a brave volunteer, a pick me. And you will win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online.
Nice. Really nice.
And now when your book comes out, we can review it on the stack, right, Justin?
It's funny. I was just thinking about that today, and I was like, hell yeah. Yeah. I want to be a guest.
You did be a guest. Me.
I know.
To me.
And it, I think and I was pretty positive.
It still hurts.
I was very positive about your work, which I enjoyed. It's to talk to your tape fiend over here, your tape magnate, Canadian tape hero, Pete LePage. Yeah.
Ooh, Pablo.
Says, why would you?
I didn't do that.
Yes, you did.
Now I do. Pablo said me.
All right, Pablo. Here we go. Question number one. Well, first, let's talk about today's trivia. Today's trivia is about Mad Cave and a small nod to the legend, Dwayne Wiggins, RIP to a founding member of Tony. Please listen to all three options before making your selection.
Now, when did the founding members give way to the legacy members of Tony?
They still tour, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw them at Jones Beach last year.
Don't knock them. You know what? I did see the white smoke over Rome when a new Tony was chosen.
How dare you? I have to put some respect on the Tonys.
They were down to Tony for a little while.
Yeah, but...
And then they got a third one.
Yeah. So anyways...
Tony is back.
Question number one. Mad Cave Studios was started in which year? Is it A, 2014? B, hey, you related to Scott, he's so cool. C, John Snyder.
What?
Pete is asking a question. The answer is going to be A, but Pablo has to get around to it eventually.
That's nice. Right. Eventually, he's got to say that, and then we can move on.
James coming out for some Mad Cave love. Great James. Timing.
There you go.
Yeah.
Woo! Pablo says A.
Correct. All right, question number two. Mad Cave is an independent comic book publisher based out of blank. Is it A, Miami? B, hey, are you related to Donald Faison from Scrubs? C, Brian Turk.
Nice, real in-world Scrubs ref here.
Sick, very topical Scrubs
ref. You like
those
commercials they've been doing lately?
Oh, man, is there a better commercial and one I want to see more than those two guys do barely committing to doing their old...
Hey, when there's chemistry, there's chemistry.
There is no chemistry. They clearly dislike each other at this point.
How dare you say that they're best?
Those commercials are abominable.
A is correct. And, how dare you? They are the best of friends. Question number three, last one. Name one original work from Mad Cave. Is it A, Kill Train? B, I don't care what his first name is. He's not dating my niece. C, Brent Sincock.
That's fun, Pete.
Wow.
Yeah.
Racist.
That's a great nickname. I love
you
that.
You think so?
Nickname, yeah. My guy Sincock.
I believe, you know, Michael has the correct answer here. What the hell?
Yeah. What the hell? How does Pete's brain work? And you want to run all of Canada's Scotch tape, Pete? With this kind of commentary?
Is it A?
It is A.
Wow. Congratulations,
Pablo. Shout to Kill Train.
Shout to Kill Train. What? Yeah. Best book. I think about it every time I get on the regular train.
I would too.
Pablo, you have won a gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we'll get that off to you. Pete, what secret movie were you referencing?
Of course, we're talking about the 1995 movie Panther.
Ah.
Great.
Tell us more.
Tony was all in, or?
Yeah, most of them were in it. Yeah, it's a
most of them. You can tell Pete's tell when he's lying is just straight up lying. He's like, you're like a Mike Tyson's punch out villain when your tells.
Well, I would love it if you tell me what comic books you're looking forward to tomorrow, because there are new ones coming out. Pete,
they're all new
stuff. There's a lot of great stuff.
There's a couple of repeats.
I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to Batgirl number 7. It's just been so badass. The art's amazing. Love the backstory we get in this comic. I've just been loving every issue. This has been must-read comics, and I fucking love it.
I think it's sad that Pete hates Mouse Guard. And
I was just going to say Mouse Guard was my next one, but...
I took a breath to look,
you know what I mean? I just switch windows.
Oh, God. Wait till we get to the doc on Pete switching windows. Great sequel, potential sequel. We'll see how the first one does. Yeah. I am looking forward to... There is a lot of stuff coming out this week, tomorrow, that
is. Are you also looking forward to Mouse Guard? Because you started to talk about it, and I got excited.
No. It's fine. I like my mice where they are. I'm looking forward to Grommets number 7, final issue of this fun book from Rick Remender and Brian Posehn about living and dying as a young person in LA, which is very fun.
I'm looking forward to talking to you about that. A controversial ending.
Nice. Black Canary, The Best of the Best, number 6 by Tom King. Yeah. Bringing that story to a close as well, I feel like it's one of those stories that up through the first 5, I don't know what's going to happen. And it could go any way. They've set up a very particular outcome. Like a very particular event that has to happen. So I'm curious where we get. And Fantastic Four fanfare, just the creators on this book, Mark Waid, Alan Davis, Andrew Wheeler, Sarah Pacelli, Alan Davis, Ramon Rosanas, like a lot of people I like on there. I'm very curious for how that's going to go.
I am looking forward. Oh my gosh, I just had it.
Window drama.
Two-Face number 6 from DC Comics. I've really been enjoying book. Christian Ward has been writing the hell out of it, and Fabio Veras's art has been
art's
phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
Last issue, so excited to see what happens. Also, I want to give a shout out another DC comic, Resurrection Man Quantum Karma number 2 is coming out, and that includes a page from Jackson Butch Guice, who unfortunately passed away this past week, or in the past 7 days. So that's a real bummer, but it'll be nice to see his incredible art again. And I will also give one last shout out to Blood and Thunder, number 1. Curious to check that out. That is a comic that is, I guess, executive produced kind of by Robert Kirkman. So curious to see how that
the
works
Kirkies.
Out. Kirky.
What does that mean?
Well, that's not how he refers to it, but basically, like, it was based on an idea he had and he worked it out.
Yes.
But somebody else is writing and drawing it. So,
Blood and Thunder.
And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Vera Broskell for coming on to talk about Return to Sender. You can check that out now from Macmillan. Also, Ben H. Winters for talking about Benjamin. That is coming out from Oni Press on June 18th, 2025. So tell your comic book shop to put it on order now. Next week on the show, Dave Hill is going to be here.
Hey.
Talk about his new comic book, Dark Regards, based on the true story of when he almost led to the nuking of a small town in the Midwest. And also, Greg Weissman is going to be on here to talk about Gargoyles Demona, the new series.
Yes! I love Gargoyles.
Great show.
Yeah.
Great show.
Ken Justin teases books. Premise at all, publisher yet.
Not yet.
We also don't have time here at the end of the show. Comic Book Club News. You can check that out Monday through Friday. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. You can check out our Thunderbolts recap and review that just went up. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, many more. Until next time, particularly the people on Instagram, good night.
That's nice. Shouts.
Shouts to the gram.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.